The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It is. And it's a Tuesday. Welcome to it. You know, Gotta Laugh is usually here on Tuesdays, but she came back because, you know, she was having the hand problems, and she was overdoing it a bit, so she backed off a little bit, and now she's going to be with us every other week. So today is not a Gotta Laugh Tuesday, but in her stead today, we have Teach Out Tuesday. Zephyr Teach Out is here. Actually, she's not really. We spoke yesterday. She fit me into her very busy schedule. And yes, it is a busy schedule, but that's okay, because I'll tell you something. Today, there is so much going on. I've got more than an hour's worth of content, so I've got to figure out how to fit it all in. So just a warning, as I tend to do occasionally, we may run a little long today, because what I want to do at the end of the show is play the speech that Joe Biden just delivered. Now, if I were grading it, if I were a teacher, I would give him an A, but not an A+, because he left out a really important element. But the speech was about the importance of our right to vote. And this is something that he's needed to do for a while that he hadn't really done, which is speak strongly, loudly, forcefully about how at risk our vote and therefore our democracy is, how precarious our situation is, and how we all must act to get it back on track, to pass the For the People Act, to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Additional Act. But he did leave out one important element that I think is necessary in order to get those pieces of legislation passed. But we'll get there. What I did was, and I used to do this during the Obama years all the time, I edited it, not so much for content. I didn't excise any parts of the meat of the speech. I cut out a couple of things where he repeated himself. I shortened the applause breaks. I cut the pregnant pauses between words in his delivery to speed it along. So instead of it running like a half hour, I think it runs like 16 minutes. But we'll see how long it takes to get through all the other stuff, and then I'll play that speech and I'll stay on for as long as it takes. Of course, I'm going to have to inject some commentary in the middle, so it may make it go a little longer. I'm just letting you know, for Progressive Voices listeners, when I do run over, you can always come to NicoleSandler.com/listen-live and get the rest of the show there, or find us on YouTube, or, you know, a lot of other places, or just get the podcast later. It's, you know, it's free. I'm not behind a paywall, and the entire show will be on the podcast. So if I lose you on Progressive Voices, that's what's going on. So just a little early warning, because again, there's a lot of stuff going on. I want to start with, and I got to find what I did with that video I pulled. Is it here? Oh man. So today is the 35th anniversary of Live Aid. No, I'm sorry, the 36th anniversary of Live Aid. You remember Live Aid? We are the world. We are the... I pulled this great news coverage of it, and now I can't find what I did with the video. This is always a professional hazard here. Let me just look one more time and see if it's here. It is not there. Man, that pisses me off. But I bet I can play it off of here. So anyway, so 36 years ago, I was in Philadelphia for Live Aid, and I don't have any pictures or anything. What I did save were the tickets. So if you're watching on one of the video feeds, here's the photograph of tickets to Live Aid. They were $35. It says doors open at 7 a.m. Show starts at 9. I believe it went for something like 17 hours. And the lineup was incredible. This was the concert. It was to benefit USA for Africa. And the It was in two places simultaneously. It was in Philadelphia at JFK Stadium and at Wembley in London. And Phil Collins, who was huge back in 1985, started the day in London. He played a set there. And then he got on a plane and flew to the U.S., or it was the other way around. I don't remember because it was a long time ago. And that was it. It was a long, pretty incredible day. So I thought I'd give you a little blast from the past if I can get this thing queued up. Bear with me one second. So at the time, I was working at WPLJ in New York. I produced the morning show there. And I got to go with a whole busload of listeners down to Philadelphia of winners, you know, contest winners, because we sent a busload of contest winners down there. So I got to go with them. And I'm trying to find the screen. There it is. Okay. To show you this report. So I went with contest winners down to Philly, and it was just wonderful. It was great. So anyway, here's a little reminder for those of you who were around back then. 1985. God, it feels like it was yesterday.
Tell you about these stories when Action News at Noon comes right
back. I queued it up too. Here we go.
From it is just beginning to pour in. Promoters say the extravaganza raised $70 million worldwide to aid the hungry in Africa. Organizers say Live Aid was the most widely watched event in history, with a television and radio audience of 1.5 billion, billion people. Concert organizer Bob Geldof has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by a member of Norway's parliament.
Okay.
And the Live Aid concert was extra special for one person. Stephen Fallon's attendance at the concert put him in the right place at the right time.
I queued in too early. It's
Doctors
coming.
In Massachusetts say Hold he on. Is doing well after a kidney transplant this weekend.
Here we go.
What you saw on your television screens over the weekend was an extraordinary combined effort, a worldwide effort to touch the starving in Africa. For the first time since Teddy Pendergrass was paralyzed in a tragic car accident 3 years ago, the Philadelphia native son gave his first live concert, providing one of the many emotional moments of the day. Another came earlier.
Steve Fallon is here.
That's Chevy
Chase.
We would
like him to go over to that balloon over there. Steve Fallon, we have found a donor in Boston. Please go to that balloon.
Police rushed Steve Fallon to Boston, where today he has a new transplanted kidney. Nearly 40 top rock artists donated their talents to the cause, performing in the biggest
Madonna.
Rock concert of the century.
Look at her, young.
The Live Aid concert was simulcast along with a second show in London. Both concerts were broadcast by television and radio to 169 countries. Producers used 16 satellites so the show could be seen by 1.6 billion people. With all that could have gone wrong, very few things did. What problems did occur were alcohol-related. The intense humid heat and all the alcohol consumption proved a dangerous combination. The 17-hour extravaganza proved much greater than anyone's initial expectations. The whole idea was to raise money for famine relief in Africa, and that's exactly what the promoters did. So far, nearly $70 million has been raised. Deborah Fox, Channel 4 Action News.
Cool, huh? So 36 years ago today, and Bob Geldof was nominated by somebody from, I think she said Norway's parliament, for a Nobel Peace Prize. I don't think he won it, but hey. Back in the day when, I don't know, we could get a billion or so people watching a rock concert. That was a great show. Yes, Bob Geldof, Boomtown Rats. Tamara Chance in the chat room got it. So one of those memories from 36 years. Man, we're old. all right, I thought I'd throw that in for some flavor. Today, here we are. We are in a much different world, right? And for the last few days, we've been talking about monopolies and antitrust and the fact that we have these antitrust laws that have not been enforced for forever. So we've dealt with this subject a lot over the last week or so. We had Matt Stoller on the program last Wednesday, had Cory Doctorow back yesterday, and Zephyr Teachout, who wrote a very important piece for The Nation that I'll tell you about in just a moment, on Friday afternoon. I mean, she got it up there fast because it was time sensitive because, again, Joe Biden delivered a speech. So on Friday, and I played for you portions of it, he went on about how we need to encourage competition. We need to stop with these corporate monopolies. We need to start protecting the little guy like you and me. And it's about time to give us the advantage for once over the billionaires. And we haven't even gotten into the space launches yet. And I don't know that we will. If we have time, I'll let you know what I think about that. But you can probably guess by the fact that I haven't even talked about it yet. But anyway, I immediately, when I heard the news of the Biden executive order and read Zephyr Teachout's piece in The Nation, I reached out to her. Now, I first met Zephyr Teachout, got to be a dozen years or so ago. It was before she ever ran for office. It was before she was kind of a household name and a rock star in the political world, but she was always an activist. And I met her through a group of activists. So she used to come on the air with me on Air America Radio. And thankfully, once she blew up and became a superstar, she remembered me. So she's always very nice and accommodating. She was really busy. She fit me in. And I've got to apologize because the audio is not the best. But I think I tweaked it so you can hear it. Anyway, it's a quick interview with Zephyr Teachout, but I wanted you to hear her on the subject of monopolies and the antitrust laws and Joe Biden's executive order and what we talked about with Cory Doctorow as a big fucking deal. Well, Zephyr Teachout believes it is too. Here we go. That Zephyr Teachout is with us. Now, we've spoken a few times over the years, going back a number of years, and I've been thrilled to see Zephyr take on larger roles. A couple of time candidate. Are we going to see you run for office again, maybe?
I'm not planning on it. I'm enjoying supporting amazing candidates and focusing on the issues for them.
I gotcha. Well, I understand. Well, Zephyr Teachout, the reason that I invited her to join us today is because of a piece you wrote for The Nation Friday afternoon. On Friday, I was thrilled to see Joe Biden issue this huge executive order, basically breaking up or monopolies, trying to give the consumer an advantage for the first time, probably in my lifetime. You wrote a piece at The Nation. Joe Biden just threw down the anti-monopoly gauntlet, but one big question remains. First of all, thank you for writing this. I thought this is a huge deal, and I thought I'd see it everywhere over the weekend. Were you surprised it didn't get more coverage? I thought it would be wall to wall.
It actually got a fair amount of coverage in the business pages. Without being too speculative, I do think this is an area where substance trumped communications, because this really important executive order did end up coming out on a Friday afternoon in the middle of summer.
Right.
Since we care more about the substance than the communications, that's fine. But I do think, of course, the little things like timing do matter. It's the kind of hour, Nicole, at which you expect to see Andrew Cuomo releasing the really bad news as opposed to a really powerful, really exciting and significant moment.
Right.
And I want to talk a little bit about why I think it's so significant, and what it does do, and also what it doesn't do. The executive order does three basic things. The first thing it did, which I actually, as I argue in the Nation piece, is among the most significant, is the area where it didn't actually use any formal power, but it was in the preamble to the executive order and in Joe Biden's speech. Biden said that corporate concentration is a major driver of inequality. That's a big deal. That has not been the position of Obama, Bill Clinton, let alone the Republicans since Reagan, who have really focused on, in as much as they have focused on it, have really talked about antitrust as being solely about consumer prices, not recognizing the incredible human and inequality costs of corporate concentration. One of the things, the moments that was the most powerful in this to me is not only did he talk about the ways in which this is corporate concentration is terrible for workers, another big moment, something did not hear from the Larry Summers, Bill Clinton complex that has really governed economic policy for so long. He actually used the language of failure, saying that we are 40 years into an experiment that has failed.
Right.
So sometimes you have to read the tea leaves to see a rebuke. You didn't have to read the tea leaves here. This was a direct rebuke of Republican and Democratic policy towards monopolies in the last 40 years.
Right. That's huge, right? And to put it in Joe Biden terms, that's a BFD.
It's a BFD. And already, I can tell you, like I'm working in New York State with other activists pushing. There's a really fantastic piece of legislation that just came through the New York State Senate. Next year, it'll be up for a vote with the assembly. I got to tell you, when you can walk into an assembly office and say, this matters because of inequality and because of jobs, last year you'd see a lot of assembly members saying, what are you talking about? That's not what anti-monopoly is. Well, not that you should have to listen to the president, but it makes a big difference when the president says, this matters for inequality, this matters for workers, and this matters for small business. That's the first thing. And that is the use of the bully pulpit, right? The yes. Second thing that the executive order did is it issued 72 different directives to executive agencies.
Right. I mean, from running the gamut, I mean, some really specific things like importing drugs from Canada, like bringing down the price of hearing aids so you can get them at the drugstore like you do with reading glasses, right? The right to repair, because so many, there are industries that say your warranty is void if you decide to get it fixed yourself. So many things. There's a million other things that I would like to see in there. I read through the executive order and didn't see the 72 laid out there. Did I miss it somewhere? Or are they published anywhere?
There was an initial press release, and then you can look at all 72. I don't have them all.
Okay.
But they are. There's a range. So some of these, and this is where it's a little. I love the presentation of this because this was a clear expression of executive power.
Some
areas, mm-hmm. the president has the power not just to direct, but to follow through. So when you were dealing, for instance, with Pete Buttigieg at the Department of Transportation, he works for the president.
Right.
The president issues a directive, the Department of Transportation better follow through.
Well, that's the other part of it is the third part is he put together a council or a group to make
yes.
sure that these things are implemented. So he's not just putting it out there and say, do it. He's following up on it to make sure these things get done.
Well, that's exactly right. Now, some of these other 72 directives are directed at independent agencies. And these are agencies that are independent by design so that the president, we ran into this a lot with Trump, you know, where's the line in terms of independence of these independent agencies? But for instance, the Federal Trade Commission is an independent agency. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is an independent agency. And in those cases, Chairwoman Kahn and the other commissioners who will vote on rulemaking do not have to do what Biden puts in the directive. However, it is extremely significant that the president is saying this is the direction that I want to move in. And certainly with the CFPB soon to be headed by Rohit Chopra, who has done an extraordinary job at the Federal Trade Commission as a commissioner, really laying the intellectual groundwork, which I think we're going to see come to fruition under Chairwoman Khan's leadership, and at the FTC. These are not independent agencies. The leaders of these agencies are chomping at the bit to do this kind of work. So it's also a real show of confidence and wind at the back for the work that's going to be really hard to do. There's going to be a lot of resistance of the FTC and the CFPB.
Right.
And now, then, Nicole, as you said, the third thing he did is set up a council, which will ride herd on these agencies to say, what are you doing? Why haven't you done the rulemaking? Why are hearing aids still not being sold over the counter? What's going on?
Right. And you mentioned the great people that he put in, like Lina Khan at FTC and Chopra, who you just mentioned, to head up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But here's the but. Joe Biden still hasn't nominated anyone to run the antitrust unit at the Department of Justice yet. I know you have someone in mind who would be great and keeping in line with these great appointments that he's made. What's the holdup here?
It is really strange. It's it is now, where are we, July 12th today?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're over six months in. Correct my math if I'm wrong with months.
No, we're six
and
months.
And there's no assistant attorney general of antitrust. And antitrust is an area where enforcement is shared across two agencies. The Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice share enforcement. And there have been times where they have actually pushed in different directions and argued against each other. Now, I would like to see Jonathan Cantor is the name I mentioned.
Jonathan Cantor, right.
He's not only an incredibly skilled lawyer, as David Dayan in The Prospect pointed out in a piece several months ago, he was one of the craftspeople behind some of many different big tech lawsuits, but one of the craftspeople behind one of the most powerful Texas antitrust lawsuits against Google, and also has a very clear alignment with Rohit Chopra and Lina Khan. Mm-hmm. And I think there are two really strong arguments for an appointment like Cantor. One is that we have a crisis. The crisis that Biden laid out isn't going to go away easy. And we need a really strong enforcer in that seat who will be looking for the cases with the maximum impact to create more breathing room for our economy so we can all thrive. But the second argument, and political from Biden's perspective, is you don't want to be having four horses going this way and three horses going the other.
Right.
That after having made these appointments already and this extraordinary executive order, if he puts in somebody who's sort of more deeply of the, you know, frankly, the Obama antitrust world, and there's some great people there, but somebody who's more embedded in the traditions of the last 20 or 30 years, you're going to see these enforcers fighting with each other. And that's not going to serve the country. It's not going to serve our workers. But it's also politically, it's not going to serve Biden. You can't go in two directions at once and win voters in what's a really critical time, these first 2 years of the Biden presidency. So, I mean, we can speculate about the holdup, but I think it's about time.
Right. So, Zephyr Teachout, are you surprised that he came out with this executive order before having someone in place there? Because this is the person who ultimately is going to oversee this whole thing, right?
Yeah, it is a strange sequence, and some people who I really disagree with have pointed that out as well, with the sequencing. But I guess from my own perspective, I still want to celebrate it because I want to do two things at once. put a big question mark and celebrate it.
Gotcha.
And I think that those who are critics of the, those of the old antitrust establishment were saying the same thing about, wait, where's the AAG before we put these in order? But their thinking was, oh, maybe the AAG might have pulled him back.
Hmm.
And I guess this goes to something you alluded to, Nicole, but I want to underline. As excited as I am about this executive order and the direction and energy that it puts this presidency in, it isn't everything.
No.
And without knowing all the details, we don't know why, for instance, there weren't some really clear directives, for instance, to the FTC to put in clear market share thresholds that are more like the 60s and prior era to make it easier to block mergers.
Mm-hmm.
Directives. He did talk about reviewing old mergers, which is great. Why not rulemaking on, just to give another example, exclusive dealing? So there's things, and if you are in different agency worlds, you've probably noticed those other areas.
Right.
We don't know exactly where, but we know there's a lot of fighting against this happening.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, you know, another provision that I noticed is the non-compete clauses he wants to do away with, which, please. I mean, I come from a radio background, and every radio station I've ever worked at, I had to sign a non-compete clause. And I almost get it with radio because you're talking about in the same market, you can't go up against the direct competitor. But they're doing it in industries as either you wrote it or someone else did, laying asphalt. If you work for one company doing road work like that, they make you sign a non-compete. It's insane. And obviously,
I also think you're being too nice about them. You're saying, well, maybe it's okay in radio.
But it isn't. No, it really isn't.
It just shows the degree that we have internalized the idea that it is okay. If a business is doing it, it must be good for the economy. No, this is you want to look at anti-competitive business behavior. It is saying you as a worker are not free to go. Now, if you're worried about trade secrets, you don't need non-compete for that.
Exactly.
Right? So that's a different area, and you've even seen the intellectual property argument in there sort of grow as a mechanism of control. This is not good for our economy when people can't freely move. It just leads to a great sucking sound of value from workers to a handful of financiers. But I gotta agree with you. I think the banning of non-competes, and we'll see what the FTC does. I hope it is a broad ban.
Me too.
Is one of the most significant pieces of this. Right to repair is also really significant. And it's also, it's politically significant because it allows you to see, this is the farmers, many of whom align with the Republican Party or are, if not aligned with any party, or are more Republican Party friendly.
Right.
They're going out of their mind that they can't repair their own tractors.
I bet. That's crazy.
But right to repair isn't just about work. It's about all our devices being able to have, like Nicole, when you want to get your phone fixed.
Oh, can I just tell you, we are in the midst. My daughter, who's now an adult, went out on her own and purchased a phone from Boost. Well, Boost is the only company that she paid for the phone up front. Cash,
right.
Bought it outright, but they lock her in for 12 months where she's got to pay for the crappy service with them before they'll unlock the phone. Other phone companies, it's like 30 or 40 days. 12 months. She's stuck with a brick now. Can't do anything about it. It's insane.
Yeah. And what you're seeing is the use of, and again, I just want to what Biden is helping us do is say, it doesn't have to be natural. And in fact, these kinds of agreements that tie the use of one device to other services, that these are what traditional antitrust law did.
Right.
And I'm working at this, we all have to work at this. Part of what Ronald Reagan's you know, hired gun economists, Robert Bork, who really led this, yeah, and director of the Chicago School economists, successfully did, is convinced people that they can't understand the mysteries of the economy. And if business is doing it, it's probably good. And that was such a sea change from an era where there's a default of just in the way that you say, hey, you know, if somebody's bribing someone else, we don't do a balancing test to figure out if it is good for the economy. If there's fraud, you don't say, or discrimination at work, you don't say, well, that employment discrimination was really on the whole good for workers because it was balanced out by something. Right. Don't even ask that. You say, no, you just can't do that. You just can't do that. We got to move back to a antitrust era that is a lot less confusing, where you say, no, you just can't do things like tie one surface to another.
Right.
You just can't have a non-compete. So it's not that we want to make antitrust law more complex. It's we want to take it away from, well, we are balancing lots of interests to decide what's good for the economy. What judge can make that decision? Move to say, no, these are business torts. These are things that are in general bad. And yeah, there might be some occasional moments where you might lose some innovation because you have an absolute ban.
Mm-hmm.
But to have a fair economy,
yeah,
we need to have those absolute bans. Otherwise, big business is going to abuse them to get gather more and more control and take more and more value and power.
Absolutely. I know you're short on time and we're going to have to wrap this up. I should just say your latest book is called Break 'em Up, Recovering Our Freedom, excuse me, from Big Ag, Big Tech, and Big Money.
I'm going to use the moment to pitch it.
Okay.
Thank
you. Oh, great. There you
read
go.
The book.
And talk about timing. Do you think maybe the president read your book?
Well, I am very pleased that whether or not I would love to have President Biden.
Yeah.
But I do feel really proud of the fact that a lot of the concepts in there have reached a lot of lawmakers. I know several members of Congress have read the book, and that some of the other articles that I've read related to the book were read in this process. So that makes me happy. We've
yes.
still got a long way to go.
As it should. All right. Well, we'll stay on this. For me, this was huge news, and I couldn't believe they did it on a Friday afternoon. And I'm amplifying it, talking to you. I'm talking to Cory Doctorow later today as well.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So he's going to spend the whole hour with me on the show today.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah. So thank you so much for joining us. I'm excited. I finally did about now we need to light a fire under them and make sure this all happens.
Exactly. So wonderful to talk to you. Thank you for shining a light on this.
Oh, you too. Thank you so much, Zephyr. Zephyr Teachout, she's the real deal. And so, yes, we taped that yesterday morning. She's really busy this week. And frankly, because I knew we were so short on time, I thought, I'll deal with the audio. In retrospect, come on, I do radio. I should have said, we have a terrible audio connection. Go out and come back in, and it probably would have cleared it up. So I apologize for that. That was on me. Kind of painful, but it's worth listening through the scratchiness of that audio to hear what she has to say because she's a brilliant woman. Zephyr Teachout. You can follow her on Twitter. I'll put a link on the blog at NicoleSandler.com. Today's show will be posted at NicoleSandler.com/7-13-21 because that's today's date. I don't want to play that. All right. We're going to do sort of a little in between. I told you I want to get to Biden's speech because it was on a really, really important topic. And actually, a way to get there is to talk about what is happening in Texas. So Greg Abbott, the governor, did not convene a special session of the state legislature when the whole state was frozen over this winter, when the electrical grid went down, when they had massive snow and freezing temperatures and everybody's power went out and people were dying and pipes were bursting and all that, did not convene a special session of the legislature for that. I would think that's an emergency, right? He did not convene a special session after the mass shooting in El Paso. That's an emergency. Did not. But because they want to, they had no instances of voter fraud in the 2020 election in Texas, except I believe one man who's a Republican who tried to cast a vote for his dead wife or something like that. The only instance of voter fraud out of the many millions of votes cast was some, you know, Republican trying to cast an extra vote for Trump. Nonetheless, they want to screw with the voting rights in the state of Texas to make it more difficult for minorities, the elderly, college students, anybody who is more prone to vote Democratic, make it harder for them to vote. And because the Democrats in the state house thwarted their efforts to do it when the regular session was in session by getting up and leaving, depriving them of a quorum so they couldn't have a vote, and the session ended, they stayed gone till the session ended. For that, Governor Abbott calls a special session. It's typical. I mean, I tend to use the word unbelievable a lot, but that's the wrong word, because it's totally believable, because this is who they are. This is what they do. And so they started this special session, and these horrendous voter suppression bills worked their way out of committee and onto the floor, and the Democrats did it again. And last night, over 50 House Republican Democrats in the state of Texas boarded a charter plane or two and flew to Washington, D.C., where they will remain for probably the next 30 days, because that's how long this session is slated to go. Thankfully, there are now enough Democrats in the Texas State House so that if all of them get up and leave, they deprive them of having a quorum, so they cannot vote on the legislation. Abbott is threatening, I'm going to send whoever after them to arrest them and bring them back. Well, if they were still in Texas, he could do that, but not when they're out of the state. And so they're in D.C. figuring they'll use the time. They're not on vacation. They're working, and they will lobby Congress to do the right thing and rules to make the stuff, the stealing of elections that the Republicans want to do, impossible. They're lobbying the members of Congress to pass the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. So that's where they are. So that sets up the Joe Biden speech. But before we get that, we uncovered some hidden video, and it happens to be the communications director for Governor Greg Abbott of Texas. And so I guess it was a hidden camera. Somebody was able to get this woman on tape explaining what the hell they're doing. Let's watch it now, and then we can get to Joe Biden, okay? By the way, her name is Blair Erskine. Oh, it would help if I hit play. Here we go.
That's right. And thank you so much for having us. If we could say one thing to the Texas Democrats right now, we would probably say, y'all are being sneaky now. Come on back to Texas now. Okay. We got work to do. Because, you know, like Governor Abbott always says, winners never quit, and Texans aren't when Texas doesn't quit. And so, unless their wives or their daughters have, requested a vacation in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. like they shouldn't be there. And so we're just kind of like, why are y'all there? You know, that's kind of our view on it. And, here's the thing. Our bill is pretty straightforward. Okay. All we want to do is end drive-through voting, end extended hours for early voting, end waiting in the car while your friend is doing their voting, end drinking water while voting. And we want to end voting. And so it's not complicated. Listen, where there's a will, there's a way. And if your name is Will, you're probably a white man, and there's going to be a way for you to vote. So we're confused about where the concern is coming from. Governor Abbott always says, why can't we do it like they do it at medieval times, and just cheer the loudest if we want the yellow not to win? you know, because they really haven't figured out over there. And
and that's how it if you didn't get it, Blair Erskine is a comedian. She's just so real. She's just such a perfect Republican. She is exactly what you'd imagine she would be. Now, I was under the impression that she is somehow related to Walter Schaub. She is not. Her name is Blair Erskine, B-L-A-I-R-E, last name E-R-S-K-I-N-E. I've gotten you guys many times with her. The first time I played a video of hers is when she posed as one of the Trump rally goers in Nebraska. If you don't remember the story, Trump did this rally in the middle of nowhere in Nebraska. People had to park like miles away, and they shuttled them to the arena where they had the rally. But then when the rally ended, they didn't send the shuttles back to get the people to take them back to their cars. And so she did a thing as one of the stranded rally goers, one of the stranded Trumpers. That was just so classic. You know what? I'm going to see if I can find it really quickly and pull it up for you, just so you can see. I shouldn't, but you know, since I'm already talking about it. Oh, here it is. A Blair Erskine Omaha parody is all I needed to pull up. All right. So, and they're quick. So here you go. So this is that one. Let me just bring it up for you so you can see it. Hold on. 1 second, I got to make it a full screen thing here. All right, let's try this. Just because we need a laugh before we get into Biden, okay? All right, here we go. Take it away, Blair.
I'm having a great time. I can't feel my body, but I don't really need my body. This is about Trump's body. I think this whole thing's been blown way out of proportion, you know? Like, yeah, they didn't let us drive our cars here, but it's because they said, you know, our cars are poor and that doesn't look good on TV. You know, you're a TV person. You know that. I think he did this to teach us a lesson. I really do. What was that lesson? Well, that's not really for me to know. And that's actually pretty nasty of you to ask. Democrats want to have their bus rides and have their bus rides back, too. This isn't the Polar Express. Tom Hanks isn't in charge of this thing. He's in Greece being a pedophile. No, I don't feel like he abandoned us. No. Listen, I would walk 750 miles in below zero temperatures, nip nude, just to hear him speak. Maybe that's not appropriate to say, but yes, I've seen some elderly people passed out and unresponsive. But to be honest, the only reason there's so many of those people is because the media keeps counting them. And so if people like you guys weren't counting the old people that were on the ground, there wouldn't be as many.
No. Okay. Sorry about that. That came booming in there. That is Blair Erskine, and she just cracks me up. She's just so perfect. All right. So there's your bit of comic relief for the day. All right. So on to what else I wanted to talk to you about. Let me make sure there's nothing else before I get there. Oh, there's Eric Adams. We'll have to talk about him one of these days. Jasmine Crockett. Okay. She's one of the Texas reps who left the state. She was on one of the, I think, MSNBC shows last night. And here's what she said about it.
What other place could we go to where we could actually seek some relief? We're still working on behalf of the people of the state of Texas. This isn't a vacation whatsoever. We're away from our families. We're away from our jobs. So the only thing that we can do is now apply a full court press to the Senate. We have a democratically controlled U.S. House. However, we're away from our families. We're away from our jobs. So the only thing that we can do is now apply a full court press to the Senate. We have a democratically controlled U.S. House, a democratically controlled U.S. Senate, and we also have a democratically controlled White House. All we're asking is that those that are in charge here in D.C., the Democratic leadership, push through something that is good.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're asking. And so that's what the topic was for Joe Biden's speech today. Now, he's gotten a lot of criticism that he hasn't been forceful enough about how our voting rights are at peril. I mean, you know, we can come out in droves, 81 million strong last November to vote for Joe Biden. But if they're able to push through these laws that are going through something like 400 state legislatures, and they will be able to overturn the election. They'll be able to do what we're learning Donald Trump tried to pull out every stop to get done, to get these states to overturn the will of the people, to overturn our votes and put in his own slate of electors who are willing to throw the election to him. So Biden, he's been going around talking about infrastructure. Friday, he introduced his executive order on monopolies and antitrust, which, as you can tell, I'm thrilled about. But there's this whole specter of the Republicans doing their damnedest to kill our right to vote and in turn kill what's left of this very precarious democracy. So today he delivered this speech. I want you to listen to it. As I said, I edited it. Not, I didn't pull out any context or really any content except where Joe maybe stumbled over some words or repeated himself, but I shortened the applause breaks and the pregnant pauses between words so it goes quicker because, you know, we only have so much time. But I want you to listen carefully and try to figure out what really important element he left out. Now, I'll stay on with you because there are going to be times that I'm going to be feel compelled to weigh in and comment because that's what I do. But for the most part, it's going to be Joe. So you go, Joe.
Some things in America should be simple and straightforward.
Yeah.
Perhaps the most important of those things, the most fundamental of those things, is the right to vote.
Okay.
The right to vote freely.
Yeah.
The right to vote freely, the right to vote fairly, the right to have your vote counted. Democratic threshold is liberty. With it, anything's possible. Without it, nothing. And for our democracy, it's up to all of us to protect that right. This is a test of our time. Just think about the past election. A 102-year-old woman in Arkansas who voted for the first time on the very spot she once picked cotton. A 94-year-old woman in Michigan voted early and in person in her 72nd consecutive election.
Wow.
She said that this election was, quote, the most important vote that we ever had. The daughter who voted in memory of her dad, who died of COVID-19, so others wouldn't have the experience of pain and darkness and loss that she was going through. The parents who voted for school, their children will learn in. Sons and daughters voted for the planet they're going to live on. Young people, just turning 18, and everyone who, for the first time in their lives, thought they could truly make a difference. America and Americans of every background voted. They voted for good jobs and higher wages.
Yeah.
They voted for racial equity.
We did.
And justice. They voted to make health care a right, not a privilege. And the reason that Americans went to vote and the lengths they went to be able to vote this past election were absolutely extraordinary. The fact that so many election officials across the country made it easier and safer for them to be able to vote in the middle of a pandemic was remarkable.
It was.
As a result, in 2020, more people voted in America than ever in the history of America, in the middle of a once-in-a-century pandemic.
It's true. It's true.
All told, more than 150 Americans of every age, of every race, of every background exercised their right to vote. They voted early. They voted absentee.
Yep.
They voted in person. They voted by mail. They voted by Dropbox. And then they got their families and friends to go out and vote. Election officials, the entire electoral system, withstood unrelenting political attacks, physical threats, intimidation, and pressure. They did so with unyielding courage and faith in our democracy. With recount after recount after recount, court case after court case, the 2020 election was the most scrutinized election ever in American history. Challenge after challenge brought to local, state, and election officials state legislatures, state and federal courts, even to the United States Supreme Court, not once, but twice. More than 80 judges, including those appointed by my predecessor, heard the arguments. In every case, neither cause nor evidence was found to undermine the national achievement of administering the historic election in the face of such extraordinary challenges. Audits, recounts were conducted. In Arizona, Wisconsin, in Georgia, it was recounted 3 times.
Yep.
It's clear. For those who challenge the results and question the integrity of the election, no other election has ever been held under such scrutiny and such high standards.
It's true.
The big lie is just that, a big lie.
Yes, that's the first time he said that, and that is the truth. The big lie is just that, a big lie.
The 2020 election, it's not hyperbole, suggests the most examined and the fullest expression of the will of the people in the history of this nation. This should be celebrated. Mm-hmm. An example of America at its best. But instead, we continue to see an example of human nature at its worst, something darker and more sinister. In America, if you lose, you accept the results.
You should.
You follow the Constitution.
All except one.
You try again. You don't call facts fake.
Unless you're
and
Trump.
And then try to bring down the American experiment just because you're unhappy. That's not statesmanship.
No, that's Trumpian.
That's not statesmanship.
Of course
that's
not.
That's selfishness.
That's
not
Trump.
Democracy. It's the denial of the right to vote. It suppresses. It subjugates. The denial of full and free and fair elections is the most un-American thing that any of us can imagine. The most undemocratic, the most unpatriotic, and sadly, not unprecedented.
No.
Denying enslaved people full citizenship until the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments after the Civil War. Denying women the right to vote until the 19th Amendment 100 years ago. The poll taxes and literacy tests and the Ku Klux Klan campaigns of violence and terror that lasted into the 50s and 60s. To the Supreme Court decision in 2013, and then again just 2 weeks ago, a decision that weakened the landmark Voting Rights Act.
Horrible.
To the willful tax election attacks in 2020, and then to a whole other level of threat. The violence and the deadly insurrection on the Capitol on January 6th. I just got back from Europe, speaking to the G7 and the NATO. They wonder, not a joke.
Nope.
They ask me, is it going to be okay?
Huh.
The citadel of democracy in the world, is it going to be okay? Time and again, we've weathered threats to the right to vote and free and fair elections. And each time, we found a way to overcome. That's what we must do today.
You think?
Vice President Harris and I have spent our careers doing this work. And I've asked her to lead, to bring people together, to protect the right to vote and our democracy. And it starts with continuing the fight to pass H.R. 1, the For the People Act.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
That bill would help end voter suppression in the states. Get dark money out of politics. Give voice to the people at the grassroots level. Create a fair district maps and end partisan political gerrymandering. Last month, Republicans opposed even debating, even considering For the People's Act.
Yep.
Senate Democrats stood united to protect our democracy and the sanctity of the vote. We must pass the For the People Act. It's a national imperative. We must also fight the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act to restore and expand.
Yes. That gets another ding.
Restore and expand voting protections to prevent voter suppression. All the congresswomen and men here, there's a bunch of you. You knew John, many of you. Just weeks ago, the Supreme Court yet again weakened the Voting Rights Act.
Yes, they did.
And upheld what Justice Kagan called, quote, a significant race-based disparity in voting opportunities. The court's decision, as harmful as is, does not limit the Congress's ability to repair the
damage
done. You hear
this?
The court doesn't limit Congress's ability to get this done.
Puts the burden back on Congress to restore the Voting Rights Act.
The burden back on Congress.
Strength.
Hello.
As soon as Congress passes the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, I will sign it and watch the whole world see it.
Okay. Keep
that
calling out the big lie.
Moment.
But, Joe, what do you? What
the
do we need to get
wondering.
Those two pieces passed?
The world is wondering.
The world is wondering. How do we pass them, Joe? Yeah.
The obstruction we face.
Yes, let them.
This is one tool, but not the only tool. And it's not the only measure of our obligation to defend democracy today.
Yeah.
For example, Attorney General Merrick Garland announced that the United States Department of Justice is going to be using its authorities to challenge the onslaught of state laws undermining voting rights in old and new ways.
Yes.
The focus will be on dismantling racially discriminatory laws, like the recent challenge to Georgia's vicious anti-voting law. The Department of Justice will do so with a voting rights division that, at my request, is doubling its size and enforcement staff.
Good.
Civil rights groups and other organizations have announced their plans to stay vigilant and challenge these odious laws in the courts.
Okay.
In Texas, for example.
Good.
Republican-led state legislature wants to allow partisan poll watchers to intimidate voters and imperil impartial poll workers. They want to make it so hard and inconvenient that they hope people don't vote at all. That's what this is about. This year alone, 17 states have enacted, not just proposed, but enacted, 28 new laws to make it harder for Americans to vote. Not to mention, and catch this, nearly 400 additional bills
400.
Republican members of the state legislatures are trying to pass. The
yep.
21st century Jim Crow assault is real.
Hello.
It's unrelenting, and we're going to challenge it vigorously.
Good.
While this broad assault against voting rights is not unprecedented, it's taking on a new and literally pernicious form.
True.
It's no longer just about who gets to vote or making it easier for eligible voters to vote. It's about who gets to count the vote. Who gets to count whether or not your vote counted at all.
Right.
It's about moving from independent election administrators who work for the people to polarized state legislatures and partisan actors who work for political parties. To me, this is simple. This is election subversion.
Yes.
It's the most dangerous threat to voting and the integrity of free and fair elections in our history. Never before have they decided who gets to count what votes count. Some state legislators want to make it harder for you to vote. And if you vote, they want to be able to tell you your vote doesn't count for any.
Okay, I'm pausing it here because he's getting, excuse me, to a really important part. And we're coming to the end of the hour, so we're going to lose our friends at the Progressive Voices Network. And I want to tell you the part that he left out. Did you get it? I mean, he's saying everything that's important. He called out the big lie. He called out that we need to pass H.R. 1, the For the People Act, and for the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. He talked about all the state legislation, but he didn't talk about what will be necessary in order for the Senate to be able to pass this, because they will not get 60 votes. He did not mention the word filibuster. And frankly, if we don't do anything about Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and the filibuster, none of what he's saying here today will work. Everything else could work, except those two big bills, H.R. 1, the For the People Act, and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, will not pass because they will get filibustered in the Senate. I'm going to continue playing the rest of this speech because it's an important speech. But at the end, according to one of the reporters, somebody in the pool called out, "What about the filibuster?" And he said, "I'm not filibustering today." Sorry, Joe. That's not good enough.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. Not good enough. So, Progressive Voices Network, oh, they're already gone. All right. We have a syncing issue on the time. I need to get our clocks in sync. Anyway, I'm going to pull back, and I'll leave you with again, the rest of the speech. But I wanted to break in to give everyone my wisdom on what was missing from Joe Biden's speech. The filibuster. He's saying everything else right, except he left out that part. All right, so let's go back and finish off the rest of the speech. All right, pick it up, Joe.
For any reason they make up. They want the ability to reject the final count and ignore the will of the people if their preferred candidate loses. They're targeting voters of all races and backgrounds with a simple target. Who did not vote for them? That's the target.
That's the target. Who didn't vote for them?
It's hard to declare just how critical this is. We've got to shore up our election system and address the threats to election subversion, not just from abroad, which I spent time with Putin talking about, but from home. We must ask those who represent us at the federal, state, and local levels, will you deny the will of the people? Will you ignore their voices? We have to ask, are you on the side of truth or lies, fact or fiction, justice or injustice, democracy or autocracy? That's what it's coming down to. Which brings me perhaps the most important thing we have to do.
Yeah.
We have to forge a coalition of Americans of every background and political party, the advocates, the students, the faith leaders, the labor leaders, the business executives, and raise the urgency of this moment. Because as much as people know they're screwing around with the election process, I don't think that most people think this is about who gets to count what vote counts.
Or who gets to decide what vote counts. Not count what votes count. Decide would be the better word, Joe.
The state legislature comes along under their proposal, and they say, no, we don't like those electors. We're going to appoint other electors. We're going to vote for the other guy or woman. Because here's the deal. In 2020, democracy was put to a test. First by the pandemic, then by a desperate attempt to deny the reality and the results of the election. And then, by violent and deadly insurrection on the Capitol, the citadel of our democracy. I've been around a long time in public life. I thought I've seen it all, or most of it all. But I never thought I'd see that for real. And in spite of what you see on television, and you saw it, you have Senator Sanders, just people visiting the Capitol. Folks.
Right.
But we met the test because of the extraordinary courage of election officials, many of them Republicans, our court system, those brave Capitol police officers, because of them, democracy held. Look how close it came. I mean, for real, how close it came. We're going to face another test in 2022, a new wave of unprecedented voter suppression and raw and sustained election subversion. We have to prepare now.
Yep.
As I said time and again, no matter what, you can never stop the American people from voting. They will decide. And the power must always be with the people. That's why, just like we did in 2020, we have to prepare for 2022. We'll engage in an all-out effort to
filibuster.
Educate voters about the changing laws.
Kill
register
the
them
filibuster.
To vote, and then get the vote out. We'll encourage people to run for office themselves at every level. We'll be asking my Republican friends in Congress, in states, and cities, and counties to stand up for God's sake and help prevent this concerted effort to undermine our election.
Please.
The sacred right to vote.
But Joe,
have you no shame?
Have you no shame?
Whether it's stopping foreign interference in our elections or the spread of disinformation from within, we have to work together. Vice President Harris and I will be making it clear that there's real peril in making raw power rather than the idea of liberty the centerpiece of the common life. Founders understood this. The women of Seneca Falls understood this. The brave, heroic foot soldiers of the Civil Rights Movement understood this. So must we. This isn't about Democrats or Republicans. It's literally about who we are as Americans. It's that basic. It's about the kind of country we want today, the kind of country we want for our children and grandchildren tomorrow.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, the whole world is watching.
Yeah, folks, it is. You need to do something about Manchin and Sinema and the filibuster, though, if we want those bills to become law.
Sentimental. I'm not preaching to you. I'm just giving it to you straight, as I promised I would always do. Lay things out on the line and honor your trust with trust. So hear me clearly. There's an unfolding assault taking place in America today, an attempt to suppress and subvert the right to vote and fair and free elections.
Yep.
An assault on democracy, an assault on liberty, an assault on who we are as Americans. For make no mistake, bullies and merchants of fear, peddlers of lies, are threatening the very foundation of our country. It gives me no pleasure to say this. I never thought in my entire career I'd ever have to say it. But I swore an oath to you, to God, to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And that's an oath that forms a sacred trust to defend America against all threats, both foreign and domestic.
And we've got those. We've got domestic threats. And the only way to get around them right now is to get rid of the filibuster, Joe.
Elections is just such a threat, literally. We're facing the most significant test of our democracy since the Civil War. That's not hyperbole. The Confederates back then never breached the Capitol as insurrectionists did on January
6th. That's right.
I'm not saying this to alarm you. I'm saying this because you should be alarmed. I'm also saying this. There's good news. It doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be, for real. We have the means. We just need the will. The will to save and strengthen our democracy.
Hello.
We did it in 2020. The battle for the soul of America. In that battle, the people voted. Democracy prevailed. Our Constitution held. We have to do it again. My fellow Americans, requires fair-mindedness, devotion to justice. Corny as it sounds, love of country requires us to unite in common purpose and declares here and now, we the people will never give up. We will not give in. We will overcome. We will do it together. From guaranteeing the right to vote, ensuring every vote is counted, has always been the most patriotic thing we can do. Just remember, our late friend John Lewis said, freedom is not a state, it's an act. Freedom is not a state, it's an act. And we must act and we will act. For our cause is just, our vision is clear, and our hearts are full. For we the people, for our democracy, for America itself, we must act. God bless you all and may God protect our troops. And all those who stand to watch over our democracy.
Joe Biden, you know what? A really good speech. That's two in a row. He did it Friday. Friday, he knocked it out of the ballpark. Today, again, as I said at the beginning of the show, I give him an A. He doesn't get an A+ because he left out the filibuster. Everything he said makes sense. It is up to us. We need to pass the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act without killing the filibuster. Both of those will get killed in the Senate. So, Joe Biden, you made a decision today not to go there, not to talk about the filibuster and how that is what's hurting our democracy right now, and that you have at least two members in the Senate Democratic Caucus who are at odds with our greater goal, which is to keep this democracy alive. So do whatever you need to do. Put on your LBJ big boy underwear and what goes in it, and show you've got some balls and do something. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and any other chicken shit Dianne Feinstein type senators who are not willing to do the right thing to make sure our vote is protected. That's your job, Joe. We elected you to do it. Should you choose not to, I guess the whole country will self-destruct. I'd like to avoid that option, please. All right. Tomorrow, Digby's going to be here. We'll talk. We'll talk about all of this. Boy, if ever I needed a day to just vent with Digby, it's tomorrow. And it is tomorrow. All right. I'll see you then. I'll leave you with the news. Thanks for listening, everyone. And Joe?
Come on, man.
Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President Biden on Tuesday plans to deliver his most forceful statements yet about Republican efforts to restrict voting rights, pointing out that they're based on Donald Trump's big lie about the November 2020 election that directly led to his supporters' violent attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Biden's speech in Philadelphia will push a sweeping voting rights measure that has passed the House but is stuck in the Senate due to the filibuster rule. Critics complain that Biden hasn't been strong enough in getting out the message about how serious this is. Prime example is what's happening in Texas. More than 50 Democratic lawmakers from the Texas House of Representatives left the state on Monday in order to deny Republicans a quorum during a special legislative session called by the governor to pass this package of voter suppression measures. By leaving and denying them a quorum, they're blocking the vote. Among other things, this legislation would ban drive-through and 24-hour voting, just one of the many tactics that would disproportionately affect voters of color. Texas State Representative Jasmine Crockett explained,
"What other place could we go to where we could actually seek some relief? We're still working on behalf of the people of the state of Texas. This isn't a vacation whatsoever. We're away from our families. We're away from our jobs. So the only thing that we can do is now apply a full court press to the Senate. We have a democratically controlled U.S. House. However, we're away from our families. We're away from our jobs. So the only thing that we can do is now apply a full court press to the Senate. We have a democratically controlled U.S. House, a democratically controlled U.S. Senate, and we also have a democratically controlled White House. All we're asking is that those that are in charge here in D.C., the Democratic leadership, push through something that is good."
So the Texas Democrats will need to stay away for several weeks until the special session comes to a close. Governor Greg Abbott has just threatened to convene yet another special session until he can ram this vote through. While they're in D.C., they'll appeal to their federal counterparts to pass national election legislation, the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Hopefully, President Biden will recognize their efforts in his speech on the subject Tuesday afternoon. He's expected to call the Republican efforts to suppress the vote, quote, authoritarian and anti-American. Turning to COVID, the Food and Drug Administration on Monday issued a new warning about the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The shot could be linked to a higher occurrence of Guillain-Barré syndrome. It's a very rare autoimmune disorder. More than 12.8 million people have received this vaccine in the U.S. already, and among those, around 100 cases have been diagnosed, resulting in one death. The FDA said this is, quote, insufficient to establish a causal relationship, but it does warrant further research. And in case you're worrying, when links did emerge between the disease and other vaccines in the past, illness typically occurred within 2 months of the shot. Well, despite all the odds, the 2020 Olympic Games are set to begin in 10 days. And now we learn that First Lady Jill Biden will head to Tokyo later this month to lead the U.S. delegation. She'll attend the opening ceremonies on July 23rd. The Trump Organization's chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg, who's been indicted for grand larceny and tax fraud charges, has been removed as officer of record from about 40 Trump subsidiary companies in the United States and Scotland. Weisselberg has worked for the Trump family since 1973. Records show he was previously listed as treasurer, director, vice president, and secretary of the Trump Payroll Corporation, which processes payroll for the Trump Organization staff and is also facing charges in the same criminal case as Weisselberg. Well, now Donnie Jr. is listed as executive vice president, director, secretary, treasurer, and vice president. And little brother Eric is named president, director, and chairman. Weisselberg, the Trump Organization, and the Trump Payroll Corporation have all pleaded not guilty
in their case.
But Weisselberg is in good company. Other associates of the twice-impeached failed former one-term president are having similar problems, like the alleged lawyers, including Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood. They were grilled in a federal court hearing in Michigan on Monday about their involvement in the, quote, Kraken lawsuits that attempted to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Well, U.S. District Court Judge Linda Parker questioned the lawyers at length about what steps they took to verify the accuracy of their claims of election fraud. She reportedly appeared dissatisfied with their responses, some of which she dubbed, quote, really fantastical. The judge is expected to rule on a request to sanction the lawyers, and she could ultimately disbar them in the next few weeks. In other courtroom drama, a California court on Monday ruled that the state's governor, Gavin Newsom, cannot run as a Democrat in his upcoming recall election. Frankly, this is inexcusable. Newsom's campaign apparently failed to meet a legal deadline to request the party designation on the recall ballot. Wow. He sued California's Secretary of State to correct the error and now has lost that case. Newsom's allies worry that some Democratic voters may not realize that he is the Democratic candidate despite his incumbency, so the lack of designation could harm his reelection chances. Oh, man. And don't forget, the last time California Republicans launched a recall of its governor, it was 2003. Gray Davis was ousted and Arnold Schwarzenegger became the governor. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com and please click on that donate button.